U.S. military forces have begun a blockade on Iranian ports and coastal areas in the Strait of Hormuz, with dozens of warships and aircraft involved in the effort. By Thursday, 14 ships had turned around, according to U.S. Central Command. What does international law say about who controls the water beyond national boundaries? The United Nations Convention on the Law of the Sea, ratified by 171 nations, has been in effect since 1994. But here's the catch. Neither the United States nor Iran signed on. Mark Sappenfield and Matthew Bell explain what it all means for the shipping lanes crucial to global commerce. It's Friday, April 17th. This is the Monitor Daily Podcast. Good morning, I'm Linda Feldman. First, our curation of news briefs from our writers around the world. Many of these are developing stories. Find the latest updates at csmonitor.com/newsbriefs or on our app. President Donald Trump announced a 10-day ceasefire between Israel and Lebanon. In March, conflict erupted when the Iran-backed Hezbollah militia fired rockets into Israel in retaliation for U.S. and Israeli airstrikes against Iran. Israel's airstrikes in response have killed 2,196 Lebanese people. On social media, Mr. Trump said Lebanese President Joseph Aoun and Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu agreed to the ceasefire in order to achieve peace. Hezbollah has rejected the first direct talks in decades between Israel and the Lebanese government, which took place in Washington on Tuesday. Pakistan works to restart peace talks. Field Marshal Asim Munir met with Iranian negotiator Mohammad Bagher Khalibaf as the ceasefire creeps closer to its April 22nd expiration. On Thursday, Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth threatened to resume bombing if Iran doesn't choose wisely in accepting a peace deal. The U.S. Navy has turned away 14 ships since its blockade of Iran's ports. But according to shipping tracker service Marine Traffic, there's been some resumption of traffic in the Strait of Hormuz. Also, young men are more likely than young women to say religion is very important. For decades, it was the reverse. But recent data found that young men were just as likely as young women to make that claim. In a report released on Thursday by Gallup, men aged 18 to 29 surpassed women of the same age group on this metric. Gallup's data spans 2024 to 2025. It's the highest point of expressed religiosity by young men in 25 years, a sharp rise that began in 2022. Young women have remained steady during that same period. Now, today's Monitor stories. As always, you can go to csmonitor.com or our app for the latest news. America's military has choked off shipping in the Strait of Hormuz, hoping to force Iran to negotiate. But the blockade could pose challenges for the U.S., further escalating tensions among the critical transit route. Anna Mulrine-Groby reports for the Monitor. In the Strait of Hormuz, Washington and Tehran are testing the boundaries of international laws that have managed the seas remarkably well, protecting freedom of navigation and facilitating a global economy. This war could roll back the clock on maritime norms or strengthen them. Mark Sappenfield and Matthew Bell report for the Monitor. A section of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, designed to help head off terrorist attacks, is also seen as a threat to personal privacy if misused. Members of Congress have been split across party lines as they wrestle with what to do ahead of a Monday deadline. Contributor Ross Herbert reports for the Monitor. Viktor Orban's landslide loss in Hungary happened despite full-throated backing from the Trump administration. Now, even far-right populists in Europe are beginning to see support from the U.S. president as a political liability. Ned Temko writes from London for the Monitor. The return of professional soccer to one part of Cameroon reflects cautious optimism about the future in a place upended by a decade of violent conflict between separatists and the government. Mbo Promise reports from Bamenda, Cameroon for the Monitor. A brutal conflict is forcing many young Sudanese to starve, fight as soldiers, or toil in mines. At Our Father's Cleft, they are instead provided refuge and education in hopes they will become change makers who bring peace to the country. Contributor Sophie Neiman reports from South Kordofan, Sudan, for the Monitor. When Bobby Gibbs sprang out of the bushes and into the Boston Marathon, she proved women could run 26.2 miles. A new sculpture she crafted at the race start marks her legacy. Kendra Nordine Beato reports from Hopkinton, Massachusetts, for the Monitor. Now, commentary from the Monitor's editorial board on South Africa's reconciliation efforts at home and with the U.S. Last week, the Monitor reported that, over the past 6 months, all but three of the 4,499 refugees led into the United States were from South Africa. The Trump administration deems white Afrikaners, descendants mainly of 17th-century Dutch settlers, to be refugees, claiming they are subject to government-sponsored race-based discrimination in majority black South Africa. This week, South African President Cyril Ramaphosa named a new ambassador to Washington, Rolf Meyer, who was not only an Afrikaner, but was also a member of the former apartheid government. The two men worked closely together in the early 1990s to negotiate their country's transition from white minority rule to multiracial democracy. "Mr. Meyer will represent South Africa very well," Mr. Ramaphosa said, noting the need to recalibrate and repair relations with the U.S. in a respectful manner. Appointing a skilled negotiator who also epitomizes the continued role and relevance of white people in South Africa, approximately 7% of the population, is diplomatically astute. The U.S. has sanctioned and boycotted South Africa for the past year, alleging unproven white genocide and confiscation of Afrikaners' land. Yet the nomination also points to enduring national traits Mr. Ramaphosa highlighted, the willingness to recalibrate and repair that have sustained South Africa's democracy. Post-apartheid leaders, such as the late Nelson Mandela, exemplified such readiness to engage in difficult discussions in the pursuit of reconciliation. Mr. Meyer this week recalled the many negotiating skirmishes he and Mr. Ramaphosa worked through decades ago. As he told ENCA Television, they got to the point of agreeing, "There's not a problem we can't resolve." "That's very powerful," Mr. Meyer pointed out, "because it signifies trust and reliance on one another to jointly find answers." Such values, Mr. Meyer indicated, are essential to support South Africa's ongoing reckoning with race, privilege, and restorative justice, and to complete a needed social-economic transformation. "In tough economic times," he says, "people often tend to blame the other. It very easily gets a racial or an ethnic connection. The average black household, research shows, owns only 5% of the wealth held by a white household, and the white population is still redefining its place amid social changes and affirmative action that seek to address historical discrimination against black people. But decaying infrastructure and social services amid rising corruption and violent crime have heightened frustration and fear among South Africans of all races. And prominent Afrikaners have pushed back against U.S. characterizations of them as victims of persecution. Last November, more than 1,500 signed a letter to the U.S. Congress. It asserted that distorted narratives about Afrikaners undermine international principles of refugee protection and harm the rebuilding process within South Africa. Outspoken Afrikaner journalist Max Dupriez last year issued a rallying call to South Africans to show ourselves in the world that we can be a harmonious and successful country. Together, Mr. Ramaphosa and Mr. Meyer the quiet architects behind South Africa's historic transfer of power might just be up to the task. The stories you just heard are from today's newsletter. Find these stories and more at csmonitor.com or on our app. For more Monitor podcasts, go to csmonitor.com/podcasts. For other audio offerings from our parent organization, go to christianscience.com/audio. Today's Christian Science Spiritual Perspective contributor shares how, as we learn of God's divine law governing each of us, we find that we can refuse to accept limitations for ourselves and others. Find the full column at csmonitor.com/csperspective. Thanks to today's audio production team, Ian Case, Mackenzie Farkas, and Victoria Hoffman.
This podcast is produced by the Christian Science Monitor in Boston, Massachusetts, United States of America. Copyright 2026.